The original form looks something like this. The key components of which, and we've all seen this or some incarnation of this form many times, the key components are that Party X is designated the operator, has sole and exclusive control of operations on the unit or contract area, and agrees to conduct all such operations in a good and workmanlike manner, but, and here's the key exculpatory language, shall have no liability as operator to the other parties for any losses sustained, except as may result from gross negligence or, at the time of the 56 form, breach of the agreement. So that seemed to set up a clear dichotomy between operations on the contract area, you know, operations in the field, and other breaches of the joint operating agreement, administrative things, things outside the dangerous and risky work out in the field. On operations in the contract area, there's a high bar of gross negligence, which is well defined in the case law. And for the breach of other breaches of the operating agreement, at least ostensibly, no additional showing required. In 1977, and the same language appears in the 1982 form, it's changed somewhat. The key, most of the key components are there, but the very last sentence excludes liability except as may be result from gross negligence or willful misconduct. So the breach of other breach of this agreement language disappears. What does that mean? Well, Professor Smith thought that it meant that the 77 form was intended to broaden the protection to tort and contract claims, any claim against the operator as operator, in a 1986 article for the Rocky Mountain Mineral Law Foundation. And then we get to Stein versus Marathon Oil, 1992 case by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Stein and Marathon are jointly developing leases under a 1977 model form JOA. Marathon drills two wells. They're not good wells. They want to plug and abandon them. Stein pounds the table and wants Marathon to test shallow formations for oil. Marathon declines to do so, offers Stein an opportunity to take over, as would be its right under the JOA, and then plugs and abandons, citing a Railroad Commission order that said tied its hands and forced it to P&A. Stein later complains at trial of various breaches, including the failure to share data, failure to timely complete other wells, and then interference with Stein's contract with Cibolo by intercepting Stein's revenue runs once Stein stopped paying his jibs. So Marathon ultimately admitted that it overcharged on JIBs, but since the JOA gave it the right to intercept this revenue, it could only be held liable for breach of contract, and then only on a showing of gross negligence or willful misconduct. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, having no Texas law to look at, looked at a couple of other Fifth Circuit cases, and none of which was really squarely on point, on Professor Smith's article and one other commentator, and held that the exculpatory clause, in fact, extends not only to acts unique to the operator, but also to any acts done under the authority of the JOA. So the subsequent Texas courts of appeals must have followed a similar analysis. After Stein, they did anything but that. In a series of cases, 8 to 12 years later, starting with Abraxas v. Hornburg, and then two other cases shortly on the heels of Abraxas, those courts of appeals, three separate courts, went the opposite direction on the same language in the 77-82 form, didn't mention Stein, and at least one of the courts said, we've never seen a case that talks about exculpatory language applying to the breach of contract action, which is a little curious. So in Abraxas, and I think I'm supposed to make this disclosure, although I was a baby lawyer at the time. That was a Cox and Smith case, but I had just shown up to the firm when that was going to trial. I remember hearing about it, but I didn't have the pleasure of participating. That involved the Cleo Smith lease in Stonewall County, produced 1.6 million barrels between 52 and 92 when Abraxas took over. When Abraxas took over, it was still clipping at about 1,000 barrels a day. Shortly after Abraxas took over, and these are just the allegations straight from the case, production sharply declined. LOE went in the opposite direction. The non-ops, disturbed by this, asked Abraxas to buy their interests. They sent a letter to the CEO of Abraxas, and they got no response. Shortly afterward, they got AFE describing various workovers on the four wells that were producing at the time for a collective $42,000, but no single workover operation on any well was more than $30,000, as the JOA required.